KZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Biden in Germany for a day of meetings made his first public comments on the killing of the Hamas leader, Yahya Sinwar.
The death of the leader of Hamas represents a moment of justice. He had the blood of Americans and Israelis, Palestinians and Germans and so many others on his hands.
He said he told Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to make this moment an opportunity to seek a path to peace. Sinwar was considered the mastermind of the October 7th attacks. It's 18 days from Election Day, and Michigan is the destination for both former President Trump and Vice President Harris. They have campaign events today in the state. The Texas Supreme Court halted the scheduled execution of Robert Roberson, who was convicted of killing his daughter in 2002. His supporters include politicians from both sides of the aisle. And NHTSA says it's investigating Tesla's full self-driving system after reports of crashes in low visibility conditions. This is ABC News. He's Andrew Dimbert. Artificial intelligence giving hope to people with ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, the progressive and devastating neurological disease. April Kerner's a mother of three from Maryland. ABC's Rhiannon Alley has her story.
April types what she wants to say with her eyes, and the program generates a voice based on recordings taken from when she was able to speak. For April's kids, it means they get to hear a voice they thought they would never hear again.
Once upon a time, in a small coastal town by the sea.
April sharing her story, told in her own voice.
Despite the difficulties I face, I am determined to keep fighting for my family.
April's condition requires around-the-clock care, but technology is really improving her quality of life.
Beyond Halloween, there's going to be less chocolate and more candy on store shelves. The cost of cocoa is driving up chocolate prices and forcing retailers to cut back on the amounts they stock. Some are turning to candy treats. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Questions you might hear a lot this fall. Will my team make the playoffs? How much snow are we getting this winter? And whatever happened to Tammy Baldwin? After 25 years in D.C., Baldwin sides with the extreme left. Baldwin voted to give nearly $1 billion in COVID relief money to criminals in prison, even the Boston Marathon bomber. That's nuts. And she supports forcing women's domestic violence shelters to admit biological men who claim to be women. Baldwin even backed puberty blockers and sex change surgeries for minor children in Wisconsin. So here's one more question. Now that Baldwin's gone so far left, why should we keep her in the Senate? It's time to replace Tammy Baldwin. Senate Leadership Fund paid for and is responsible for the content of this advertising. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. www.senateleadershipfund.org.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Charges are filed against Jesse Vang and Katrina Bauer in the death of Elijah Vu. Manitowoc County District Attorney Jacqueline LaBrie made the announcement at a news conference Thursday afternoon.
Well, I will not comment further on the details of the case out of respect for the ongoing judicial process. I assure you that we remain committed to working with law enforcement to hold those responsible for his death accountable.
Elijah was the 3-year-old boy from Two Rivers who went missing in February and whose body was found last month. A bail hearing for Bauer and Vang will be Friday. Vice President Kamala Harris is blitzing battleground Wisconsin with 2.5 weeks to Election Day. She campaigned in Milwaukee, La Crosse, and Green Bay Thursday. Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan are critical to Harris's chances of winning in November. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
It's the Badgers and the Wildcats. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Wisconsin takes on the Northwestern Wildcats tomorrow, kickoff at 11 a.m. Head coach Luke Fickell was asked, how has the Badgers' offensive line improved this season?
I would say as much as anything is just their ability to play together. You know, we've had consistency up front in particular across the board. But I think their ability to, you know, figure out what it is that they do well and play together.
NFL, the Packers host the 5-1 Texans on Sunday. NBA, the Bucks losing last night in Dallas, 109-84. The Bucks finished the preseason 1-3. Were the rookies paying attention last night to head coach Doc Rivers?
Well, sometimes they hear you, sometimes they don't. It's just normal. There's so many things going on in their mind. When I think they're struggling hearing it, I say less. When I think they're open to hearing it, I say more. And you just got to have a good read.
That's the Bucks' Doc Rivers with Sports on Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Mostly sunny and still windy today. We'll get to around 70 this afternoon with wind south at 15 to 25. A few sprinkles tonight, 48 tomorrow. Clouds, a few sprinkles in the morning. More sun in the afternoon with a high of 68. Sunday, sunny with a high of 75. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 51.
Maggie Dawn.
Next, I'm joined by Chris Alfheim, candidate for State Senate District 18. We'll be talking about Northeastern Wisconsin politics and why your vote matters.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Nice to have you along on this Friday morning. October 18th, one day before my little sister Steph's birthday. Happy birthday, sis. Coming up this hour, the usual excellent stable of workhorse guests. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel will be here. Mark Jacob will help us break down some of the news coverage of this week's events. Dan Schumacher will help us talk about sports. And, of course, Brittany Merlot will be here in just seconds to talk to us about the weather as well. First little note about some of the sports you can hear across the Civic Media Radio Network. The Wisconsin Badgers are at Northwestern tomorrow playing a little footy ball. The pregame starts at 9 a.m. on WLAK in Amory, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, WRJN in Racine Kenosha, and WRCE in Richland Center. The Badger men's hockey team, you can hear Saturday's game versus Ohio State starting at 5:30 Saturday on WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids. The Green Bay Packers are at home hosting the Houston Texans on Sunday pregame at 10 a.m. on Civic Media stations in Racine Kenosha, Richland Center, and Park Falls. And, of course, there's high school sports all up and down the Civic Media Radio Network. So head to civicmedia.us or pick up the Civic Media app to learn more. I should mention as well, so the men's hockey is actually Friday and Saturday hosting Ohio State at the Kohl Center. The Badger women's hockey team, ranked number one in the country, is in Minneapolis to play the Minnesota Gophers this evening and tomorrow afternoon. And the Badger women's volleyball team is at home this evening against number 11 Oregon. So a big match there, and then they'll play Sunday at Michigan. So that gets you caught up to where you can hear sports across the Civic Media Network and elsewhere around Wisconsin. Now let's bring in meteorologist Brittany Merlot on a day that is definitely not as cool as it was, you know, a couple days back, but temperatures have dipped a little bit from last hour. It's 49 here in Chippewa, 50 in Hayward, 38 in Wausau, 50 in La Crosse, 39 in Rapids, 51 in Amory, 43 in Madison, 36 in Waukesha, 45 in Milwaukee. And Brittany, with such a spread like that, I don't know how much of that is kind of a west to east with a system or how much of that is elevation. Some of the low spots get a little cooler this time of year.
Yeah, so this is mostly elevation right now, besides the fact if you're by the lake, right? Some of that water holds that warmth much longer, so those towns stay warmer. In fact, Superior, Wisconsin is one of the warmest places in the state right now, way up northwest. They're at 54 degrees, while Wautoma in the center of the state is coldest at 27 degrees. So that's kind of what's happening today. because of those clear skies, it allows that radiational cooling to take place and temperatures to drop like that. But most of us are above freezing, so we're not complaining. And we've got a beautiful day ahead. High pressure system is huge. It's taking over the entire central part of the United States, the eastern coast as well. So we're all sitting pretty under abundant sunshine today. Highs reaching the upper 60s to low 70s today. It's going to be gorgeous. We're going to hold on to that heat for tomorrow as well, into the low 70s statewide. And then by Sunday, we climb into the mid 70s. There's only a teeny tiny chance of a few scattered showers late tonight through tomorrow in far northwest portions of the state. Otherwise, everybody else is staying dry and sunny.
So your Smokey Bear sweatshirt is going to have to go away for the weekend. All the sweatshirts and sweaters, we get to tuck them away for just a couple more days before we bring them all back.
Yes, we do. You can hang on to those short sleeves one more time, but again.
Did you have anything to report from the windy conditions yesterday? I got some great video of a leaf NATO in front of the house here, in front of the door, the way the house is set up. The wind hits it just right, and there's like, it feels like the entire yard full of leaves is now massed up against our front door, like we should shovel a path to it. So the wind got a hold of that from time to time, as gusty as it was. And, I mean, that was very impressive, watching all those leaves swirl like they did. I'm sure other people got some artsy-fartsy photos as well.
Oh, that is awesome. I want to see some of that. I'm going to go to your page and check that out. No bad news just yet. Just be careful burning out there. Don't even do it.
The winds are still high today.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Rob says, good morning from Tigerton. It's clear and 32 in Tigerton. Yesterday was an excellent day. I got to meet and visit with Kristen in Wittenberg, then took more fall color pictures. He says, I did paperwork to send bills out to my lawn mowing customers and then had a taco salad at Blazers in Split Rock. And I'm going to enjoy nature today. That's the prescription that I got from Brittany. Well, yep. Dr. Merlot, good job out of you.
Thank you. Thank you. That's usually my prescription. Nature helps a lot.
I think that's a great prescription for all of us. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. It is coming up on 7:12 here on Up North News Radio. We're going to be talking at the bottom of the hour here with a veteran Chicago journalist, Mark Jacob. And I'm going to express my surprise somewhat pleasantly that the New York Times ran a story yesterday that actually starts to look into one of those words that people hurl around. You know, there's socialist and there's communist and Marxist and all this. Well, another label out there is fascist and fascism. And what is it? And why have people been using that word around Donald Trump? And why are people using it with increasing comfort, in part because his rhetoric is matching it? And we'll get into the use of government authority, the abuse of government authority to persecute other people, or at least to intimidate other people. And the reasons why anybody in a governmental role or a law enforcement role should be very mindful of whether they are engaged in a potential overuse of their power. Now, I haven't hesitated one bit, for example, to say that what I think the sheriff in Dodge County did in persuading all of the local election clerks there not to offer drop boxes, in my mind, crosses that line. For others, it may be more of a gray area. It's not his job to interpret election laws, but to investigate, you know, potential violations of them if they should happen. There's a new example up in Oneida County that I find very troubling, and it involves Kirk Bankstead of the Minocqua Brewing Company. Now, I know Kirk. I've known him for some time, and Kirk is someone that you could use the term provocateur, and he doesn't have a problem provoking others. It seems like he is impervious to all of the many ways that people who disagree with him, especially up north around Minocqua, try to oppose him, try to block him, try to persecute and try to prosecute him simply because he is an outspoken liberal and does not take kindly to anything that, you know, he thinks might be untoward. So the thing about a provocateur, you could also call them a troublemaker. The same thing gets said, for example, about, you know, investigative journalists. that they're maybe poking and prodding in areas where they shouldn't. But the thing about provoking is that you find out where there are lines and boundaries and where there are people who might be playing fast and loose or careless with where those boundaries are. And in the case of Kirk Bankstead, that has to do with him being arrested the other day. It wasn't a traffic ticket. It wasn't anything in the area of a felony. It was, quote, criminal defamation. I'm letting that sink in, because defamation is about as nonviolent a crime as it gets. And what exactly constitutes criminal defamation that can't be taken care of in civil court? Kirk Bankstead is very familiar with civil courts and defamation. He has been involved in a case for his ongoing feud with the publisher of the Lakeland Times, an extremely right-wing newspaper that, in my mind, does a tremendous disservice to northern Wisconsin for the amazingly twisted interpretation they put on events local and national. Kirk Bankstead has been a frequent critic of theirs. I would say that some of that criticism, again, in his provoking style, crossed a line, and he has had to settle a very large civil judgment against him in a defamation case. All right, it's settled. He's paid up a very hefty amount of money to avoid bankruptcy. And you might have thought that that was it. He has certainly had his share of run-ins with Oneida County and with the town over his brewery, his plans to put in a beer garden, the insanely obvious ways that local and county government have tried to block his business from expanding and growing in ways they wouldn't do with any other business, the ways that they have tried to put him out of business, quite literally. And again, it's only for some good legal representation that he's been able to avoid it by and large so far, and continues to provoke people and refers to the Old Boys Network up in Minocqua. But at what point does that cross the line into being arrested? Well, he certainly found out the other day when he was pulled over as he was leaving the Minocqua area, heading back to Madison, and said he was under arrest for criminal defamation and was kept in the holding area of the county jail there for a little while, being told that there was going to be this criminal charge against him, a criminal charge that nobody anywhere in Wisconsin, to my knowledge, has acknowledged has ever been used before. It is Kirk's contention that somebody there told the folks at the Lakeland Times, well, maybe the civil case is over and you can't tie him up in civil court anymore, but now you can tie him up in criminal court where his insurance doesn't play a role. He had insurance that protected him in part in the defamation case, but wouldn't help him in the criminal case. And in his mind, this is how the Old Boys Network is using the criminal justice system to continue to harass him. He's most likely going to sue Oneida County and the town yet again. And this time he says he's not going to settle. He's out to prove a point about what he calls corruption. And it gets me back to my original point. And that is, it doesn't matter if you disagree with someone for their political beliefs. If you are willing to turn loose law enforcement and the courts to selectively persecute people that you don't like, and you do that in cahoots with, say, some of the leading business figures in the community, that is the very definition of an old boys network. And yeah, it tiptoes very, very close to that F word, fascism, that we're going to talk about in a little bit. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel is coming up next. You're up north.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Kamala Harris gets that everyday costs are too high. She has real plans to tackle price gouging, cut taxes for middle-class families, and make life more affordable. Her opponent's plan?
Donald Trump plans to impose what is, in effect, a national sales tax on everyday products. It will mean higher prices on just about every one of your daily needs. A Trump tax on gas, a Trump tax on food, a Trump tax on clothing, a Trump tax on over-the-counter medication. Donald Trump's plan would cost a typical family $3,900 a year. When everyday prices are too high, he will make them even higher.
Kamala Harris, a better plan for lowering costs for a future we can afford. Paid for by FFPAC, FFPAC.org. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. FFPAC's responsible for the content of this advertising.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Carl Sarecki from Door County Trolley. Have you ever lost anybody on one of the tours?
The question really isn't did you lose people or did you gain them? True story, one of our drivers.
So he gets home, picked up a spirit along the tour.
Yeah, he's in bed, and then all of a sudden the treadmill starts up on him.
See, if I were a ghost, I think I would just get liposuction. I don't think I would mess around with cardio.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allbald Show.
Send lawyers, guns, and money. Dad, get me out of this.
You might have heard there's going to be a debate tonight between Senator Tammy Baldwin and Republican challenger Eric Hovde. And heck yeah, Civic Media is going to have that starting at 6:50, just ahead of the 7 p.m. debate put on by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association Foundation. So again, 6:50, tune in for debate coverage and the debate at 7 between Senator Tammy Baldwin and Eric Hovde. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel is with us. He, of course, is host of Amicus, a law review that can be heard on Saturday mornings live and again on Sunday mornings across stations on the Civic Media Radio Network. Mr. Santel, good morning. How are you?
Pat, delighted to be with you once again on this interesting Friday morning in Wisconsin and in the United States of America.
It's always interesting that we are living the curse of may you live in interesting times. And here we are. I'm going to take what I talked about in the last segment and switch gears and make it more of a federal matter, because again, we're kind of our theme this hour is the abuse and the overuse of government power. And I know I already threw this at you. I already know you put your hands up, but I'm doing it again for emphasis anyway, that for this Supreme Court, well, for the six conservative justices, to say that a president, in this case Donald Trump, but any president can basically use the U.S. Department of Justice in any way they want, constitutes an official act, and that they have full immunity for something like that. Again, that was kind of how a lot of people interpret that. And Jim, when you're talking about use and abuse of government authority, I just still think history is going to look back on that decision and say, what?
I think it's also going to end up one day, maybe in our lifetimes, if we see it, on the dung heap of Supreme Court cases. And you're being much too diplomatic, my friend, and that is that it's not interpreted that way. John Roberts came out and said that a sitting president, former president, absolutely immune for communications, interactions with the Department of Justice, leads to your very good point this morning in all of your conversations about the abuses to which that ruling, in combination with a president who chooses to use it, could end up resulting in the demise of the republic. How? Again, ordering the Department of Justice to do overtly illegal things, investigations, arrests. Frankly, although it's much more difficult under the Constitution, but even indictments, charging people, not charging people, doing all kinds of things that are the hallmarks, as you have been talking all morning, above a fascist who does what he or she wants to do with power given to them by the people and now by our United States Supreme Court. It is a lethal combination of both judicial authority coming from the Supreme Court saying you can do this, and then we may be electing a president soon who has gone on record saying he's going to go after his political rivals. He's going to go after the former present president, former presidents, former candidates. He's going to use the Department of Justice for his own political ends. That is, once again, to use your phrase, the definition of fascism, and it is beyond just abusive.
Right. And I guess it also takes it a step further when you don't just control the executive branch, but when you control one other branch, when you can have the judicial branch upholding whatever you say, it wouldn't even matter if the House and Senate were to go Democratic in some of these instances. Now, we like to believe, and I still do, that the wheels of justice continue turning, however slowly the arc of history bends toward justice and all of that. But it's slow, and I don't like to pass along depressing news, but the update on the classified documents case this week that a couple of Jack Smith's leading attorneys have stepped down, basically acknowledging that these attorneys can't even work on the basic classified documents case at Mar-a-Lago because it's going to be stuck in appeals courts for the longest time. Can I still look for a silver lining in that if Trump doesn't win, at least that case is still alive?
Yeah, I think you can. But again, I appreciate fully when I saw that headline, even before having to read the subheadline, I thought that's exactly what's going on. You've got very qualified, apolitical, nonpartisan, expert trial attorneys waiting around to try this case. And what you have is the district court judge, again, dismissing it based upon the fact, not the fact, the unsupported statement that there's no authority to prosecute in the first place. The 11th Circuit will almost certainly reverse her, but then it goes back to her or somebody else. We are still nowhere close to trying that case. That's what these lawyers are intending to do. And that's why they said, you know, in the meantime, what do you want us to do? What do you want us to focus on? Once this case gets back to the district court, there may be more things. When is that going to happen? When can we pick a jury in this case? And they said, you know what? For purposes of right now, I'm going to go do something that's more productive. It is not that right now. But to your other good point, if in fact, again, the 11th Circuit will overturn that decision, but it goes back more motion practice. If in fact Donald Trump is defeated, then presumably you've got a Justice Department that will continue to support Jack Smith going ahead on that case, going ahead on the insurrection case. But even there, we may not see a trial in those cases in 2025, maybe 2026. And again, they will be on track to be tried. But the delays in these cases are things that are not typical for criminal cases. I did this for 30 years of my practice with the Department of Justice. Delays, certainly, based upon pretrial motions and the course of justice. But this kind of thing is becoming extraordinary. And I think Americans have a right reason to be very skeptical about a system that delays disposition this long under this many roadblocks.
I've clearly watched too much TV, from Game of Thrones, you know, with the army of the undead marching on you, or disaster movies with the giant comet hurtling toward Earth. But Lordy, if we have to depend on the current timeline to avert disaster, we are in serious trouble. You've got much more ahead coming up on Amicus tomorrow, including, let's try to hit at one of them quickly here, a new medical marijuana case. Can you tease what you'll talk about there?
Sure, that's just, we got a bunch of cases. You've got a driver who sued the maker of a product said to be free of THC under a federal racketeering law, saying he suffered a business injury. So it's not medical marijuana in the traditional sense, but we're going to talk about what the Supreme Court said about that on Tuesday in its oral argument, and what the tea leaves say about whether he will be successful in that forum of being able to go ahead with his lawsuit eventually. Fascinating case.
Jim Santel, helping us discover every little point of law that we can talk about. Jim, appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Always a pleasure. You too, Pat. Take care.
All right. And when we come back, as mentioned, Mark Jacob and I are going to continue that conversation on media coverage of Trump and getting increasingly comfortable seeing that the Venn diagram between Donald Trump and fascism is quickly becoming a circle. That's next. You're up north.
Guns and money. Hey!
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Wisconsin cheesemakers make a move to protect their most valuable assets, their employees. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Friday. I'll give you details on this new alliance with OSHA next.
There I was, driving along, when I saw the corn laying down in the field, goosenecked again. Even though I tried everything, new traits, existing soil insecticides, every corn grower knows the hassle of gooseneck corn. But now there's Narisma Insecticide from BASF, a better, stronger in-furrow insecticide that controls corn rootworm and below-ground pests. Stand up for your corn with Narisma Insecticide. Ask your authorized BASF retailer about Narisma, and always read and follow label directions.
This new alliance announced yesterday in Madison involves the Wisconsin Cheesemakers Association, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, and the Wisconsin Safety and Health Consultation Program. They're boosting their relationship to support their most important asset, their employees. Rebecca Sweeney with the Wisconsin Cheesemakers explains.
We're really excited to enter into an alliance with OSHA because dairy processors believe that their most valuable asset are the people who work for them, right? The people who work every day to make delicious, nutritious dairy products. It's critically important that we work with regulators as opposed to at odds with them. And for the past 2 years now, we've had a very open dialogue with OSHA about things like lockout, tagout, machine guarding, hazard communication. And what we've seen is a real reduction in the number of any even minor incidents within dairy processing facilities.
Rebecca Sweeney, she's with the Wisconsin Cheesemakers Association. Under this new alliance, they're sharing information on safety laws and standards and OSHA initiatives. They're encouraging communication between OSHA and industry to provide input on issues and try to innovate safety solutions. And they're developing resources for the dairy processing industry on common workplace hazards, worker rights, and employer responsibilities. More available at MidwestFarmReport.com.
What makes Dairyland Seed silage unique? Better. Designed specifically to maximize tonnage potential in the upper Midwest, Dairyland Seed silage products contain higher starch content and the highest level of fiber digestibility for optimized milk production. And to help get even more milk in the tank, these elite genetics are supported by your dedicated local dealer and direct access to a team of leading agronomists and silage experts. Better silage, better support, better results. That's the Dairyland Seed difference. Meet our 2025 lineup at DairylandSeedSilage.com.
And the Wisconsin DNR is suspending burning permission in 25 counties across the state of Wisconsin due to our dry weather. Again, more at MidwestFarmReport.com. I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Mostly sunny and still windy today. We'll get to around 70 this afternoon with wind south at 15 to 25. A few sprinkles tonight, 48 tomorrow. Clouds, a few sprinkles in the morning. More sun in the afternoon with a high of 68. Sunday, sunny with a high of 75. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 48.
The Todd Alba Show.
Minority Rule. The author is Ari Berman.
If you look back at Wisconsin history, it gave rise to Social Security and unemployment insurance and collective bargaining. It really personified the idea that no matter what political party you were with, government should work for the common good. And Walker had a very different idea, that government should work for this conservative elite instead.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Lena Bloom for The Bail Project.
Imagine you're stuck in a jail cell and you can't afford bail and someone offers you a way out. Just plead guilty and you can go home and kiss your kids goodnight. What do you do? What thousands have. You plead guilty whether you are or not. Cash bail makes poverty a crime. That's why The Bail Project helps those who can't afford it while fighting to end cash bail. Because freedom should be free.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, my guest for Freaky Friday is Racine paranormal investigator Ron Helmick, who brings actual audio footage of a ghost. And it's a bar band Friday night, so Terry Barr stops by.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
Luke, we mentioned that this was one of the many songs that had been written by the late Cynthia Weil, who was born this day in 1940. But I'm sure younger folks heard that. And who's in the meme there that they made? Is he it on?
Cage. It's Nick Cage
is it Pedro Pascal?
Yep.
Okay. And I don't know what it's from, but it's such a great little 5-second clip with this music that gets used in so many memes and
The meme is hilarious. It's from a movie where Nick Cage like plays himself, and Pedro Pascal is I forget the name of the movie off the top of my head. I can look it up real quick, but essentially he's obsessed with Nick Cage, and he's like this billionaire that brings Nick Cage to the island that he lives on, and like wants to recreate the action films that Nick Cage is famous for. And
see, that sounds funny. I haven't watched it yet.
I have a list of media that I can't wait until like I can just veg out and get through as much of it as possible, and sure. It's on that list. But
well, when you and I are sent to the re-education camps next year, we'll have plenty of time for things like that. Which gets me into
it's
the
so
discussion
scary.
Here.
It's so true. It's so scary. I'm terrified, Pat. Thanks for fueling the nightmares.
Gets me into the discussion of what happens if Donald Trump wins, and what does he stand for, and what would he really do if he had that much power again. And including, Kamala Harris is talking about this now, too. The word fascist used to be, has been used a lot. And it's been misused by people on the liberal side who hurled it against anything, conservative that they didn't like. But it has an actual definition. And we're going to talk about that with Mark Jacob in a sec. But here's Vice President Harris talking again yesterday about, not disagreeing with people who think that Trump's whole business model, if you will, for government is rooted in fascism.
He said he will target and punish those who disagree with him or refuse to bend to his will. He calls these Americans the enemy within and says that he would use the American military to go after American citizens. Journalists whose stories he doesn't like. Nonpartisan election officials who refuse to cheat by finding a few extra votes for him. Judges who insist on following the law instead of following him. It is for reasons like these that General Mark Milley, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Donald Trump's top general, has called Trump, and I quote, fascist to the core. And it is clear Donald Trump is increasingly unstable and unhinged. And will stop at nothing to claim unchecked power for himself. He wants to send the military after American citizens. He wants to prevent women from making decisions about their own body. He wants to threaten fundamental freedoms and rights like the freedom to vote, the freedom to be safe from gun violence, to breathe clean air and drink clean water, and the freedom to love who you love openly and with pride.
Okay, that all may be true, but does that cross the line into fascism? Well, the New York Times put up an article yesterday saying that, Democratic leaders have been reticent to use the word. But they write, as Mr. Trump steers his rhetoric toward nativism, racial resentment, and overt threats against his political enemies, that reticence has fallen away. They quote Robert Paxton, a political scientist at Columbia specializing in Vichy France, who defines fascism as political behavior, quote, marked by obsessive preoccupation with community decline, humiliation, or victimhood, with cults of nationalist purity. There's Peter Hayes, a historian at Northwestern, who has studied the rise of Nazism and defines fascism as a militarization of politics through violent militias, misogyny, hypermasculinity, intense nationalism, calls for economic self-sufficiency, meaning isolationism, and a scapegoating of groups separate from an aggrieved core of followers. There's Trump's calls for mass deportations and internment camps against, quote, the enemy within. There's his refusal to distance himself from groups like the Proud Boys and the Three Percenters, his persistent evocation, even glorification of violence. And that's why Peter Hayes, the historian at Northwestern, says, I don't think we're hyperventilating here. This is a guy very much telling us what he wants to do. And finally, Timothy Snyder, a Yale historian of Central Europe and the Holocaust, describes fascism as government framed around the choosing of its enemies more than the helping of its citizens. The honoring not of an office, but of a capital L leader, and the building of a cult around him, usually built around a big lie. Now we bring in Mark Jacob, because it seems like every week we pick on the New York Times for something. Mark, good morning. We finally found something that we can say, yeah, where you been?
Yeah. And, you know, just to be clear, the New York Times does some good things. It's not like they're always terrible. It's just that much more should be expected of them. And it's good to see them finally get on this thing. I've been, you know, using the word fascism for, you know, several years now, and not recklessly, I don't think. You know, I mean, I co-wrote a book called Aftershock, which was about the last year of World War II and what devastation it wrought. It wrought that devastation because of fascism, because of authoritarianism, because a dictator took a minority group and demonized them and lied about them in order to increase his own political power, and then disaster fell. And, you know, I just wish that everyone had been paying attention in high school when they talked about this, if they did. Sometimes they didn't, I guess. But it's fascism is a real word with a real definition. It's not really just this insult term to throw out at people. But that's what's going on right now. I mean, Pat, you know, Trump is talking about the bad genes of immigrants. Bad genes, that's his word. Mm-hmm. That's a scary word when you think about all the history of that kind of thing.
And you know what would blunt all of this is if the man had real, not just concepts, but concrete proposals, not just 1,000% tariff. Right. But what have I said from the beginning? This is a guy who claims to be a builder. Where's his infrastructure plan? You know, where's the healthcare, not the concepts of a healthcare plan. Right. Where's the healthcare plan? It's the lack of proposal. When you can turn to Trump and all of his supporters and say, what is it you want to do?
Right.
What's and it's positive? Always rooted in persecuting an enemy rather than doing some kind of service.
Well, you know, and that's just the hallmarks of a demagogue. And the thing about that is that as far as this immigration thing, because that's the group he's chosen right now to, you know, to demonize. And all right. So he's even talking now about getting ejecting legal immigrants from this country. I mean, those immigrants who he talked about, the dogs and cats thing in Ohio, those were legal immigrants. He's pretending they're not, but they are. And then he's saying he wants to deport them. So even legal immigrants, he seems to have something against. And all right, so our immigration system is hopelessly, it's really in a bad shape. And, you know, and it's not all our fault. It's not all America's fault. You know, these Central American countries have, you know, with bad governments, have been chasing their citizens out for a long time now. So there's a big problem. You know how you address big problems, Pat? You pass laws. You get government to kind of fix things. Well, there was a bill in Congress to do just that, a bipartisan bill, if I remember. And Trump said he was going to put a brick on it. You know, don't do anything with this because I want to run on this issue. And that's such a fascist thing to do, to say, I want the problem, I don't want the solution.
Right. And by the way, we started talking about this last hour by saying there are people who love to hurl all kinds of words, not just fascist, but socialist, communist. I recall back in 2010, basically the Tea Party year, really started throwing socialist out there. And it was tough for me to take it seriously because it was clear they didn't actually know the definition, because there's nobody advocating government taking over business. Just because you don't like a government regulation or you don't like a tax is not the same as government taking ownership of your business. And so don't throw words out there that make you sound less intelligent than you probably meant to be. But if you're going to use a label, use it accurately. And it's the increasing appearance of accuracy about this label that finally got the attention of at least somebody in the national press.
Yeah, I can see why people would be, you know, back when I was a kid, sometimes you'd hear So, oh, well, so fascist that your parents made you clean up your room. You know,
yes,
I mean,
right.
You know, there was, it was this kind of this nebulous term that, you know, it's just kind of a funny term because we were like beyond World War II when it like devastated the world. And we didn't think that we were going to have to run into it again. Well, we're running into it again. This is what these people do. It's a, it is an attempt to create these kind of this other. The one of the best ways to define this kind of fascist technique is othering people. Is the, I mean, Pat, I think that's great about this country, is that all of us, even if we're different, are part of the same thing. And you know, and what's cool about America is you have all this clash of cultures, and I mean a mix of cultures. You have great restaurants, you have great music, you have all these great things because we tolerated other cultures and other kinds of people. And to see somebody trying to make political hay off of hating other people is just disgusting. And but it's, you know what it is, Pat? It's fascist.
Mm-hmm. And again, the accuracy is there. And so you call something what it is, what it appears to be. Now, before we people go, well, is the New York Times doing anything wrong this week? I did pick on one thing. on any given piece of election coverage, up at the top of the page is all these little subheads or sections of things that the New York Times is also covering. And here's the page topper that I saw yesterday, crust top of the page. Updates. That makes sense. Poll tracker. Swing state ratings, electoral college paths, early vote tracker, and Senate House races. In other words, everything that is the opposite of what we said this year's theme ought to be, the stakes, not the odds. Right. Everything about their leading coverage, their front page is still about the latest polling rather than the issues that can help a voter decide what to do.
Right. And not only that, but it's also kind of sometimes style points. You know, they write a lot about, well, is this a good political tactic for them to do? Is this, you know, and what they really ought to be talking about is what we just talked about, is whether somebody is pushing, you know, authoritarian rhetoric, or whether what are they going to do when they get into office? You know, that ought to be what the bulk of the conversation is. But when you have somebody who just has a concept of a plan for something he promised to actually deliver 9 years ago. 9 years ago, Pat, Trump said he was going to have a health care plan for everyone. 9 years ago. He was president for four of those years and nothing. I mean, I would think that would appall people. I mean, what the hell? But but everything just kind of flows down. And look at the latest poll. Isn't the interesting poll? What an interesting poll.
Yeah, we forget all about the things that should actually hold people's attention. You know, the healthcare plan that he said was coming in 2 weeks. I'll release my taxes, you know, any moment now. And we're still holding our breath, waiting for that. I have to ask you about one thing not related to coverage of this week's thing, but certainly the media business overall. I was a little surprised to see that on election night, there's going to be a new player in the game. And covering the elections live on Amazon Prime will be one Brian Williams, formerly of NBC News, before he got into a little fibbing scandal, I guess you could call it. That caught me by surprise, but maybe it's not so much about Brian Williams, but that now Amazon Prime wants to, I mean, they got into live sports. They've got Thursday Night Football. So, yeah. I mean, are we going to see, you know, an Amazon nightly news before too long?
Well, maybe. I mean, I think it would be a good thing. I mean, the more media, the better is kind of my attitude about this. Unfortunately, when you look behind the curtain, a lot of those media are owned by the same people. So, So it's not necessarily, you know, a great thing. But I guess Amazon's owned by Bezos and he owns the Washington Post. I think it's a great thing. I mean, honestly, you look at the media landscape, you know, right now. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of bad going on, and a lot of the really most trusted players in legacy media are faltering and collapsing. My former newspaper, the Chicago Tribune, is a mere shadow of its former self. I'm sorry to say they've like laid off 85% of their staff.
I know.
And so but new players, new online news sources. That's what we need.
And new opportunities. Yeah. Overall, Mark Jacob, thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
All right.
Dan Schumacher's up next.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
This is an important announcement for Wisconsinites who plan to vote in the November 2024 election. Leading nonpartisan economists have analyzed the economic plans of Donald Trump and concluded that he would cause inflation to rise and the economy to slow. And 16 Nobel Prize-winning economists wrote a letter warning that Donald Trump would reignite inflation with his fiscally irresponsible budgets. Donald Trump's tariff plan would act as a national sales tax, costing the average family as much as $4,000 per year. But Vice President Kamala Harris's plan would help middle-class families deal with rising costs. In her first 100 days, Kamala Harris would pass a ban on price gouging at the grocery store. And as vice president, she worked to cap the cost of many prescription drugs, including insulin, saving many families thousands of dollars per year. On the economy, the choice is clear. Vote Kamala Harris for president. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together Action, www.abwt-action.org. Not authorized by any candidate or candidates committee.
The green and gold tailgating, the frozen tundra. Lambeau Field has a legacy all its own, including where to build it. Residents on both sides of Green Bay argued for it. Officials wanted property with room for growth. In the end, 50 acres of farmland was purchased, but the address, Ashwaubenon. More bargaining, and in 1956, the land was annexed to Green Bay. Now, do you know the other reason leaders considered this annexation so important? Parking, beer sales, keeping the Packers in Green Bay? The answer coming up. The Green Bay City Stadium project moved quickly from there, and in less than a year, opened with a Packers-Bears game. It became Lambeau Field in 1965, following the death of team co-founder and coach Curly Lambeau. So did you guess why the land annexation was so important? It's all three, keeping the team in the city, parking, and beer sales. Ashwaubenon was dry at the time. Officials believe Packers fans wanted to be able to buy beer and could in Green Bay. This history makes it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matinee on Air.
There are so many good ways you can get information about the election. Do not use the excuse that you don't know enough about what's going on. We've got some fine sources. One from our friend Dan Schaefer at the Recombobulation Area, Civic Media Political Editor, has put together a 2024 voter guide. Find that and more at civicmedia.us. And the Up North News voting guide at upnorthnewswi.com. And I have just loaded up there about 10 different stories that we've done on key legislative races, and more are coming by the day here. So get that over at upnorthnewswi.com. Well, Greg Bach is off this week, and Mr. Mathers did exactly what he promised he would do when I said, hey, Greg always picks out a Grateful Dead song for Dan. He's like, I don't have time for that. I'm picking the first thing that comes up in Google. Of course this was going to come up. And so there we go. You get the classics today because Luke and Pat do the remedial course when it comes to Grateful Dead tunes.
Well,
how do you plead, Mr. Mathers?
Remedial? Elementary. Just the most basic I could possibly get. I was like, and honestly, this was like the third one down, I think. I tried to do a little, you know, like not the top line one, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, what's the when we talked about John Mayer the other day? What exactly is this? Does he own the group?
Yep, he bought out the group.
Okay.
That happened shortly after Bill Kreutzmann, the longtime drummer for the Dead, did not play in this last swing of a tour. They had some musical differences. They wound up selling out to John, so he owns 51% of Dead & Company. The rumor is that they will get back together and play in Vegas again, a residency. Right now, Bobby Weir's moved ahead with what he calls Dead Ahead. They've had so many different names and different, you know, versions.
Incarnations and everything else. And we mentioned it because Bob Weir had a birthday the other day.
Bob Weir and John Mayer both share the same birthday.
But definitely not the same year.
No.
But when you say, oh, they had musical differences, I'm like, they've been together nearly 60 years. And
it had to do with Bill and John, and there was the struggle. And
I get that people sometimes get divorced after 40, 50 years. It does happen. But if you're still having musical differences.
After 50, 60 years, that's some creative ego going on right there. All right, let's get to sports before we run out of time. Your Bears are on a bye this week. They'll next be at the Washington Commanders next week.
And they move that game time. They moved the game time off noon to 3:30 to make it premiere and move it to CBS.
I'm glad you said that because my original schedule said 3:25 here. So let's get the Packers preview done here. It's right here. Packers playing at Lambeau against the Houston Texans. Pregame at 10 a.m. on Civic Media stations in Racine, Kenosha, Richland Center, and Park Falls. Check out civicmedia.us for more details. The Badger football team is at Northwestern tomorrow, pregame at 9 a.m. on those Civic Media stations in Amory, Wisconsin Rapids, Racine, Kenosha, and Richland Center. And then there is no shortage of high school sports.
On that Badger Northwestern game, they've played 33 years in a row. Okay, what do you think the record is of the wins, losses? In the every single of the 33 years, Northwestern was the underdog on the betting line. And just guess what the record is of Northwestern versus Wisconsin in 33 years.
I'm going to say they've won 7 of them.
17 to 16.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
And they've covered every
one of their. This is why I don't bet.
And they covered every one of their losses as well. I think people look at it on paper and say, oh, Wisconsin should kill Northwestern. But no, this is a funny year for the Big Ten. It's a funny year for NFL. The NFC North is strongest division in NFL football right now.
Right.
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, all those new schools in the Big Ten are all losing to the old Big Ten schools.
Well, yeah.
UCLA, USC, all of them. It's just amazing. It's almost like they're stepping into a different caliber of football from when they went from the Pac-12 to now the Big Ten.
Because they are, and there's going to be an adjustment period here. Badger men's hockey, they play Ohio State at the Kohl Center Friday and Saturday evenings. You can hear Saturday's game starting at 5:30 on WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids. The top-ranked women's hockey team is in the Twin Cities to play the Gophers tonight and tomorrow afternoon. The Badger women's volleyball team plays today or tonight at home against 11th-ranked Oregon. And then on Sunday, they travel to Michigan. And, of course, there's all kinds of high school football games on across Civic Media stations, and you can hear many of those on the Civic Media app. Head to civicmedia.us for more about that. Will you be watching with your Bears off? Will you watch the Packer game, or will you look for something else to be a spectator?
I'll probably watch the Vikings-Detroit game, and then I'm going to run home tonight to Chippewa tomorrow. Or I should say tomorrow, and then I got to come back early. We have the best week of the year for an institution countrywide is the week that they have to pass their accreditation every 10 years. The Higher Learning Commission has to come in and bless you. So next week is nothing but meetings and stuff, so I have to be back here in Ashland all next week to make sure that we can get it reaccredited as an institution. So
you
it's
have
a major
to do
thing.
Your
every school has to do it every 10 years.
It's like doing a research paper or a term paper. This something that you gotta study for? All right.
And before we break, like I mentioned to you last night in a text, I know I don't know what the news is going to be, but you got Wisconsin's prodigal sons, Tony Bennett, Dick Bennett's son. He's announcing out of the blue, announced yesterday that there'll be a press conference at 11 and he's going to retire. Now he's won 2 national championships. He played at Green Bay, was an All-American at Green Bay, UW Green Bay, where his dad coached. The whole practice facility at UW Green Bay is named after the Bennetts. Mm-hmm. The Bennetts and the old Eau Claire coach Anderson. Mm-hmm. Was huge when they were at Stevens Point versus Eau Claire. So hopefully Tony is retiring for the right ways, not the bad ways, such as being sick or something like that.
Good. Well, we hope so. Hope so very much. Dan, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
You betcha. Take care.
All right. Luke, thank you so much for filling in for Greg these past couple of days. You have a good weekend as well. And we hope you enjoy the weekend here and join us back here at 6 a.m. Monday morning here up north. I'm Pat Quitewell. Have a great weekend.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. Our old friend Peter Rapine from EPOM's World wraps up with a week in review of The Lighter Side. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
At Civic Media, we encourage active political engagement and remind listeners to think critically about political advertisements you may hear during this critical election year. Our stations are licensed by the FCC and are required to accept all ads for federal candidates. We also air state and local candidates, as well as paid ads from issue and PAC groups. Truth is rarely as simple as any political ad may claim. So again, we urge you to think critically about what you hear in the spirit of promoting authentic and respectful civic dialogue.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. This is the Buzz of the North.
WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.